더블.
Good evening and welcome to Burst of Bubble live on Cam FM, a show about weird and unusual news. I'm Michael Quintario, and joining me in the studio this week are my co-presenter Chris Moten.
Hello.
And our guest Cara Donnelly.
Hello.
And we're going to get down to it this week with a culinary section. We've got a food and drink section for you, starting with what is claimed to be the UK's cheapest meal, as determined, strangely, by the Royal Society of Chemistry. I didn't think that they would be the person you would turn to first, like maybe, I don't know, Delia, Heston, Blumenthal, someone like that. The Royal Society of Chemistry is not who I think of when I think sandwiches.
They're in charge of determining here the cheapest meal, correct? So what we've established is that the Royal Society of Chemistry is capable of comparing one number to another, which I'm glad to learn.
Also, they have a royal charter. I mean, I don't think any of the other individuals we named do, so why would we believe them about things?
Yes. As a staunch royalist, I refuse to believe. I believe Unilever and everything they say on account of their, I believe, their appointment to Her Majesty the Queen. So unless you can source things within one degree of indirection through something with some sort of charter or appointment, or even if they just, like, you know, make breakfast for the Queen, that's fine.
So what about, do you believe everyone who's in a town that has royal in front of the name?
I believe that town exists.
Yeah, there are many towns with royal in front of the name.
Good. Then we have lots of towns.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I believe the mayor of that town. I think that's close enough.
Yeah. Well, getting back to the toast sandwich, apparently they said it costs 7.5 pence to make. It's a toast sandwich, which is a slice of toast inside two slices of bread with salt and pepper.
They say that that's the UK's cheapest meal, but I've just thought of an even cheaper meal in which one swallows a fivepence piece. By my calculations, that costs 5p.
I'm not quite sure why they couldn't just have the someone putting that to me, the salt and pepper inside and without the toast. Because then it would be a salt and pepper sandwich, and that would surely be even cheaper.
I think you could omit the toast.
Yeah.
And you could also omit the sandwich. I mean, you know, are we considering the null meal to be a meal? That's the important question here. Like, is that our baseline?
Well, maybe it's something like calories per penny. So, in fact, the UK's cheapest meal might be 10,000 tonnes of mashed potatoes delivered over a 10-year period.
Yeah. That would make sense.
Because you have to invest in potato futures, and they're cheaper than actual potatoes.
Well, exactly. Per weight.
Yeah, you'd probably live for the longest if you appropriately rationed your 10,000 tonnes of potatoes.
I'm not sure you can live on just 10,000 tonnes of potato.
Well, that's not the question.
It'd
the
be
question
fine if you
sat
the occasional five-penny piece.
If one meal is 10 years' worth of mashed potatoes, then you can have other meals during that 10-year period. Just sort of mix them into the mashed potatoes as and when it approaches your mouth.
But, this is taken from this recipe was taken from Mrs. Beaton's book of household management, which was written and published 150 years ago. A book telling you. I want to know: does it give you exact details of how you're supposed to make this sandwich? Does it give you instructions for how long to grill the bread? Does it give you?
I've tried reading Mrs. Beaton's cookbooks, and they're incredibly opaque. Like, they're not in list format, if I remember rightly. It's just sort of lots of prose. And it uses verbs we don't use in English anymore, like braise.
Braise? That's a word, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I'm almost certain I've made recipes in which I braised a thing. Although, now that I'm pressed on the matter, I couldn't define it. I'm almost certain I've done it. So, I could tell you things that it definitely is not, in the sense that I know I've done it, so if you can name a thing which I've never done, then I will be able to eliminate things that might be braising. That's the best I can offer.
So have you ever made a toast sandwich?
No. So that is not braised.
Okay. Toast sandwiches are not braised.
Excellent. We're making some progress. I've never eaten a five-penny piece, so that can't be braising. Braising in this case would presumably be attempting to digest copper and nickel.
Yeah, going back to the story, there was a quote from the RSC's Dr. John Emsley said, I would emphasise that the toast sandwich is also good at saving you calories as well as money, provided you only have one toast sandwich for lunch and nothing else.
Well, see, this is why I think it must be something like calories per weight, per penny, because if you buy two sandwiches, then suddenly the 100 tons of mashed potato come out in front. But if you buy one, then the toast sandwich is just marginally cheaper.
Yeah, I would be interested to know, just, was I, you have only one toast sandwich for lunch and nothing else? Does that mean nothing else all day?
I don't think so. I think it's for lunch.
Because if you, yeah. I mean, along these sorts of lines, you could say that, like, the cheapest meal is foie gras, so long as you refrain from eating it. You know, it's...
I mean, you can eat as much as you want at Elevens's, but at lunch you have to have one toast sandwich.
I want to know, in the student, the RSC employee John Edwards said, in my student days I thought a meal of 9p noodles was the epitome of thrift, but a toast sandwich is tastier, quicker, has more calories and comes in at just 7.5p.
I refuse to believe anyone that uses the word epitome has ever eaten 9p noodles.
But it does raise the question, are we on the verge of a new price war? Are supermarkets going to start advertising their things relative to the toast sandwich?
It would be a horrible currency. I mean, like, what's inflation like in the field of the toast sandwich? Like, what can I expect as a 10-year return on, like, a shipping pallet full of toast sandwiches?
They'd probably go mouldy.
Yeah, they depreciate quite fast.
Well, people do measure prices in terms of, like, Mars bars and loaves of bread that they're equivalent to. So perhaps a toast sandwich would be a new icon of our times for that. Compare everything in terms of toast sandwiches.
I'd like to launch a competitor in the form of the toast sandwich, and its logical conclusion. You know that.
Well, I'd like to launch a competitor in the form of toast.
So you're going for the minimalist angle.
Yeah, let's occupy different areas of the market and try and squeeze Michael out.
Okay, I'll keep on nesting more sandwich parentheses until it seems physically impossible.
I'll sell thinner and thinner pieces of bread.
Okay. See, I might actually eat, like, a wheat lamina, like, you know, sort of a sheets of graphite, like a single sheet of graphite is one atom thick. Like, I would eat that, but made of, instead of carbon, wheat.
Maybe that's what the Royal Society were trying to produce. I mean, they've done graphene, and now they're like, well, what else can we make really thin and then layer?
And it just didn't go very well. Like, this is basically toast. We've made a slice of toast. I cannot believe the effort, the millions of pounds we laid into getting out what is in fact an ordinary slice of toast. We'd better make a press release up immediately, see if you can find an 18th century cookbook.
Johnson, stop eating that.
We need to make a press release to the 18th century. That's more like a time machine drowning than anything else.
Maybe they landed underwater.
Why do time machines never land underwater, generally speaking?
They do, they're just very depressing films.
Also, anthropic principle. We never see the time travellers that landed in the Mid-Atlantic Ridge.
moving on from a cheap food to what I assume is quite an expensive drink. A tea company based in Portsmouth has broken the record for making the world's largest tea bag, which was 2.4 by 2.4 metres in size and weighing 120 kilograms.
Ah, yes. This is, if you've ever seen that website Pimp My Snack, this is Pimp My Staple. This is, as a brief sidebar, incidentally, is it just me, or does the website Pimp My Snack not make any sense? On account of how, if you pimp something out, you make it unnecessarily gaudy. You don't make it 100 times the size. Like, if pimpmobile was a slang for driving a Routemaster bus as a personal vehicle, and a pimp cane was a sort of a 24-foot oaken staff, which was really inconvenient to move around.
Well, have you ever seen a pimp? Like, they're 39 times taller than average humans.
Really?
Yeah.
That would explain why vice is quite so hard to fight.
Because they're huge!
You're like, you're under arrest, and they're all, I squish you beneath my foot.
Curiously, most pimping is localized in Tokyo.
In the 80s?
Yeah. How did you know? If only our time machines were broken, we wouldn't be able to go back and use those. 39 times the size of a normal human Japanese pimps.
Yeah, yeah.
Getting back to the tea bag.
The other big thing, yeah.
Other big thing.
That staple that was Pimphead.
It was, it was to an attempt to beat the previous record, which was set in the American TV program Attack of the Show. So where that was a large show, I'm not quite sure, but apparently it was attacking. And the previous record was 68.49 kilograms, and they've gone for 120 kilograms. So they obviously don't believe in slight incremental increases in things. They believe in just, like, doubling, almost.
So the headline actually says HMS Warrior. Is that... What is that? Is that a naval ship?
It's a ship that is in Portsmouth. And is basically a museum now.
Okay, so it's not active duty.
No.
So I was all ready to be upset about the waste of public funds about this, but a museum making a giant teabag with public funds, or possibly not, I don't know, is presumably a lot less upsetting than the British Navy. Just...
I think it was just the tea company made it, and the ship was just a convenient way of displaying it.
Right.
What?
Have you seen the size of it? It's huge. You can't.
It is massive, but it states in there, for example, that it took a crew of 6 people to lift the teabag onto the ship. So the most convenient way of displaying it was to stop at that point and display it. At which point you would have a massive teabag on a pier instead of a massive teabag on an ancient warship currently in use as a museum. There surely must have been, you know, there's no question to which the logical answer is, let's do it on the HMS Warrior, unless the question is, where shall we go best as to sink the HMS Warrior?
That would be a really bad idea, because then you'd be on it when it's sunk.
Okay, yeah, fair. It's not the answer to that question either. Where shall I go if I want to squat the HMS Warrior?
That is not a verb.
Really?
No.
Okay, fair enough. Because you get squatters.
You can squat.
No, it's actually not a verb. It's just squatting is a noun. We inherited it from French.
So what was the verb in French?
Squatter.
That sounds like a noun. I think a squatter would be... That would be a person. You need something with an A ending.
That would be a squatter.
Moving back again, this record...
You have me on my utter ignorance.
Yes.
Moving back again, apparently the record attempt was part of Guinness World Records Day, which I can only assume is a day in which they attempt to break the world record for breaking the world records, which apparently is a thing these days.
If you're going to do it on a day, you'd feel silly if you didn't do it that day.
So presumably there are several competing different Guinness World Records days, and eventually you'll have the Guinness World Record Day with the record for number of days which broke previous records. If you're going to abstract it twice, you may as well abstract it a third time, right?
I think that record would be taken by anybody who broke a record by incrementing the cumulative records broken since beginning of time counter
within
every time.
Within a 24-hour period.
Okay. As long as we're resetting this thing from time to time.
Yeah.
Otherwise, this is going to get silly.
Other Guinness World Record Day attempts in that day include the largest gathering of leprechauns, which is more than 300 people, which has left me confused about the definition of a leprechaun.
I think it was probably zero.
And the largest speed dating event.
The previous record for gathering of leprechauns was zero.
Yes.
What is one leprechaun, if not an individual...
My statement is actually, leprechauns don't exist. The largest speed dating event, is that a speed dating event with lots of people, or the fastest speed dating event?
I think it's lots of people, but perhaps they had to combine both of these two, because if you've got a lot of people and they've all got to meet...
That's true.
Perhaps they just had two conveyor belts and going past each other very quickly, and so like, hi. Ooh, I like that one.
You have falling to tackle the person off the conveyor belt.
Anyone without a date falls into a Pink Floyd-style hopper at the end before being crushed by a hammer. Find love or die.
What is a Pink Floyd-style hopper? I've obviously missed something here, because it's a hopper. I can't see how you make it Pink Floyd, apart from having people playing music at people as they're falling in.
There's Pink Floyd at the bottom of the hopper going, God, why did we do the gig here?
Damn you, Roger Waters. Damn you.
Yes, I'm not sure how that went.
That was actually in Sid Barrett's Last Will and Testament.
No. Also, yes, going back briefly to the tea bag. Apparently, the guy from the Guinness World Record.
That's a thing. So, the largest tea bag to me sounds like, especially by a warship.
No, not going there. It has to be exactly the same as a small tea, identical to a normal tea bag, simply an upscaled version.
And it was. That's fine.
Okay, I'll leave my horrible internet slang where it is.
We can get at most 3 degrees of separation away from really horrible allusions to genitals. That's the rules. So says Ofcom, and so say we all.
moving on, we're going to talk about... Stop it.
Sorry.
Moving on, we're going to talk about what is described in this story as the humble office water cooler.
The American Army was teabagged today by the HMS Warrior. After an embarrassing battle came to a close.
They just dropped the giant teabag on them?
You know full well that's not what I'm imagining.
No, but that's what I'm saying, and that's what it's going to go down as.
And that to which you allude, triply indirectly, as according to law, is really hard for warships to do.
Yes, moving on to the humble office water cooler, which is being deployed as a projectile weapon.
So I enjoyed this story in which you use ancient cannon to fire full office cooler water bottles through walls, but I didn't enjoy reading that these were perfect to deploy in hostage situations. Now, every film I've ever seen with a hostage situation suggests that you get someone on the phone and phone them up and you talk, and meanwhile the SWAT team creeps in the background, but they don't actually get through, and eventually it's all worked out with talking and so on in a very uplifting way.
What films have you been watching?
The Negotiator.
That's one.
Die Hard.
That's not what happens in Die Hard.
I didn't watch.
I'm pretty sure they die.
But regardless, in none of these films do you bring a cannon up to the side of the building and fire it through the wall. Like, since when is that approved hostage negotiation procedure?
But it depends if their demand is basically the demolition of this wall. It's like, well, let this hostage go. Why did you demolish this wall in a strange and unusual fashion? Yeah, apparently the theory behind it is that the wall will get destroyed, and then you'll just get splashed on the other side.
It's true, you'll get splashed on this side. Like, it's better to be the guy knocking the wall down if you're using the water cannon as to oppose the fire cannon, which was like the previous model. But if you're on the other side of the wall, you still get lots of breeze blocks falling on your head, very much in the same way that you did when the fire cannon was in use. And in fact, because all the fire, you know, the fire ends up on this side, the fire and or water splash ends up on this side, the negotiator stroke SWAT team side. So this is better for the SWAT team, but yeah, this is no good at all if you're a hostage. Yeah. You're still going to get breeze blocked in the face. And that is one of the worst places to get breeze blocked.
Are we going to move on from the fire cannon, water cannon to earth and air cannons? Possibly we end this with a heart cannon.
A magic cannon?
A heart cannon actually fires a heart which has been pimped out and is therefore roughly the size of a small family home.
I was thinking more it used the power of love in some strange way. Perhaps,
You mean it would rewrite their personalities?
I don't know.
That sounds horrific. Don't worry, hostages. We're going to rewrite your personalities with this cannon.
No, not the hostages.
No, I'll stay as a hostage. I fear splash damage. splash damage is damage which...
splashes.
happens over a wide area.
Yeah.
Yeah, roughly the area defined by a giant teabag, in fact.
Ah!
Ah! Oh dear, but also a brilliant quote. Well, not a quote, but a line in the news article. The guy who runs the company's marine project explained that the wall breaker has advantages over traditional methods of gaining entry to buildings and structures. Personally, I prefer the traditional method, which is a door. I fail to see.
Okay, no. When the first structure was created, Like, the traditional method is going to have to be the first way by which humankind ever entered a structure. Now, this will have happened very shortly after humankind first created a structure. And it seems quite unlikely to me that a door was, in fact, the answer.
Wow. Okay.
It might have been just a big hole, and it might have been going, ugh, the structure is impervious to entry. Notes for Mark 2.
What if you started off by living in caves, and then they were like, wait, we can sort of remove the hill from this? They might have actually made doors by the time they got around to removing the hill.
Wouldn't that just be a hole, though? Like, to be a door, it needs to be a closey thing.
Right, but removing hills is difficult.
That's true.
Like, they might have worked up to doors before working up to hill removal.
Yeah, okay. No, fair enough, then. Maybe, yeah. Yes, I concede this point. The traditional way to enter a structure is to sweep aside the curtain of moss.
Okay.
That is how we should solve hostage situations. Install a curtain of moss, sweep it aside, and say, pardon me, would you mind my removing those hostages?
Damn, why did I forget to guard the curtain of moss? It looked so peaceful.
If you've got any comments that you'd like to give on any of the culinary wonders that we've been describing in this section of the show, you can email us, studio@camfm.co.uk, or if you're online at camfm.co.uk listening to the show there, you can use the web form, or you can text us by texting CAM plus your message to 80809, and texts cost 10p plus your standard message rate.
We're going to take a brief musical break now, but we'll be back talking about more silly news stories in about 5 minutes.
97.2.
Your station.
Your Cam FM.
Welcome back to Burst the Bubble on Cam FM with me, Mike Quintero, my co-host Chris Moten.
Hello again.
And our guest card only.
Hello.
And we're going to move on to a story about happiness. Because we feel that the studio is not happy enough, so obviously we're doing it slightly wrong. Because rather than having this orange and turquoisey logo, perhaps we should be having yellow balloons.
Yes, this is a Kenyan artist whose name I will leave Michael to take a brave attempt at pronunciation, but who has decided to cheer up the country by thrusting yellow helium balloons into the hands of office workers disembarking from commuter buses and such like of a Monday morning.
This to me doesn't sound necessarily happiness-inducing, so much as surreal-inducing.
Well, I would actually kind of assume that if someone was trying to give me a balloon, they would be giving me a corporate-sponsored balloon. Like, Detica! Yellow balloons! And so I'd be like, no, thank you. I don't want a corporate-sponsored balloon. I guess maybe in Kenya they don't have such a strong tie between free things and whoring out your body to sell multinational corporations.
So what would it take for you to trust the balloon? Like, how bad does the degree of branding or marketing need to be before you would conclude, this is probably just nice?
Well, those balloons are blank yellow, and I would definitely assume that I was accidentally advertising orange juice or lemon juice or like...
But no specific brand of lemon juice. Just this would have to be from the lemon marketing board in order
yeah.
a sort of a very vague pressure group that likes people to eat more citrus.
you could be promoting balloons.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah,
that's really an example. The balloon just representing itself.
Sometimes a balloon is just a balloon.
But is it a corporate balloon in that situation? Well, who knows?
Well, maybe Balloon Corp would answer that question better than I.
Is there an umbrella organisation with generic
no,
interest
it's a
in
balloon
inflatables?
Organisation, you idiot.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
But, you know, the artist is actually from the US, Yasmine Arboleda, who was trying to... insert the iconography. Yes, I can.
You claim you can say the name, but you don't really know.
No, I don't. Into the habitual nature of working life. So, I kind of got to the point now where, because I do outreach for science, balloons aren't celebration. Balloons are those things where you use for demonstrating static electricity.
Or blowing up hydrogen.
Yeah. And those balloons you've been demonstrating static electricity with are actually a cynical publicity ploy by the Electron Company. They hold the rights to electrons. They lost the rights to positrons, though, so we can actually get away with them. But we have to go and live in the antimatter universe, so it's quite a lot of work. Very few people take that option.
But they're saying, suggesting that art is not just a photograph or a sculpture or a painting. It is this choreographed set of balloons as they spread throughout the city. Now, don't know about you, but choreographed surely implies that they planned it, which means either that they're not, they don't actually mean choreographed, or it means that they're giving them to specific people whose lives they have mapped out entirely in order that the balloons will go in the exact direction that they're wanting to. And in my head,
In my head,
what actually happens is eventually all the balloons get taken home by these workers, and just at one moment on their way home, you can take a satellite photograph and it says something like "Hello," or something like, or
yeah,
possibly
Balloon Corp.
Yeah, or just advertises a company.
You're choreographing them into something silly and mundane. I assumed that this was like the film The Adjustment Bureau, you know, where you have those guys who have kind of like a flowchart of your complete life, and this is the day when they write, okay, the following 10,000 people, it turns out, a critical node in the flowchart. The flu chart is just get flu, die. Don't get flu, awesome. No,
that's the Republican healthcare plan.
In the flow charts carried by the members of the Adjustment Bureau, they've established there are 10,000 people where there is a critical node labelled get balloon, happiness, don't get balloon, become president. So they're running
balloon
around.
Plan.
I thought you were going to say the flu chart was connecting of fireplaces.
No. You mean like in that noteworthy series of children's novels?
Yeah, I'm down with the kids.
You're down with the kids at least circa 1999, which I think is when the Chamber of Secrets came out.
In a less worrying alternative universe, they could have just printed on the balloons in green, like, please release this balloon at 10 a.m. So you'd have, like, once an hour waves of balloons rising up from the city, and that would be quite nice to watch.
Yeah. Apart from all the ones that were inside by that point, you just got all these offices in Nairobi just with balloons bouncing along the ceiling. I like that, actually. That's fine. Let's just do that anyway.
Yeah.
So if you'd like to donate to our plan for 10,000 balloons to do this in Cambridge, then... then you can email in.
You could also rig them to...
detonate.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, you could rig them to explode at 10 a.m. Like, not in a horrible, you know, exploding death way, but just in a bang way. Just because if you were walking along the street and you had a balloon and you were walking towards somebody and they too had a balloon and then both of them simultaneously went blam, I think that would be a conversation starter, wouldn't it?
Sniper, get down!
Although Chilly just carrying the balloon is a conversation starter. It's like, why are you carrying that balloon? The same balloon that, like, the vast majority of people nearby are carrying. What does it do? What's it for? Who are you advertising?
Nairobi ground to a halt today as everyone started talking to one another rather than working. Apparently it was art.
Economy crashes. Pesky artists bring the place down.
Balloon Corp moves in with an iron fist. Umbrella Corp completely ceases its production of zombies.
Umbrella Corp seriously considers change of name. on the vague topic of the explodey balloons, the artist apparently mentioned that he thought to give these out because there'd been a series of grenade attacks in the country, which is obviously, you know, terrible. But he's quoted as saying, "I believe strongly that countering grenades with balloons could send an important message. That message presumably being we're going to need a better counter for these grenades."
Yes, like, I do not know military tactics.
Enough of them could do it.
Have they tried a cannon? Like, maybe a cannon with water inside?
Ooh! You can make this work, right? If you attached enough balloons to every soldier. So that, because, like, every time a piece of shrapnel hits a balloon, a little bit of energy is lost, and a little bit of balloon explodes. So if the US Army was composed entirely of infantrymen who are, like, 500-yard diameter balls of balloons, then not only, A, are they pretty much impervious to damage, but B, we have recreated the prisoner.
and see, it will stop them doing any aggressive, themselves, because they're surrounded by balloons.
Yes, you'd probably be able to hear them inside, like trying to fire a rifle. We'd be like, bang! It's like, ah, that only broke about 20 balloons.
I can't breathe.
And it was really loud. I don't want to fire this thing anymore.
Apparently, the balloons were handed out as part of a worldwide installation called Monday Morning, which he repeats weekly. Sean can only assume. Yes, as part of the continuing project, he plans to dole out balloons in four more places: in Europe, Colombia, Australia, and finally New York.
Kind of not very good at, like, what constitutes a country and a city, then, is this artist.
It's kind of like we've got a continent, a city, a country, which is not quite a continent on its own, and then a city again.
Yeah. Mm. Unless it's a telling mistake, and his goal has to do with, like, getting New York to secede from the United States. So he'd have been, like, Europe, Colombia, and New York. Don't you mean America? Yes. America. That's what I mean.
The Americans would send in their ground troops, but by then the New York balloon soldiers would already be bouncing towards them. Like, no!
All they can do is engulf the evildoers, and then there'll be quite a lengthy fist fight in the midst of the massive balloon ball.
Oh, do you know what it'll
be like? A ball pit.
No, it'll be like that bit in did you ever watch Funhouse as a kid?
No.
I did, but I don't recall the bit where they have a massive fight inside a huge ball of balloons with honest will to kill each other.
There was a balloon tunnel in there, which is one of the things you could go through in the funhouse, where you had to open up one side and then just like burst, get your way through the balloons and come out the other side with your prize. And yeah, you're in there and like half of the balloons got popped by the person just trying to get them out of the way. I imagine it would be like that, but with more killing.
I mean, if not only did you manage to knock them out inside the balloon sphere, but also convert them to your cause, you could have a really nice sort of meiosis, mitosis kind of thing, yeah. In which you have two balloon soldiers that are slightly smaller.
And like the balloon thing would stop and everybody would go, ah, it has converted one. And then a dazed guy would stumble out of it and go, yeah, Kansas. I love Kansas. Gonna eat some apple pie, I think.
Is that what they eat in Kansas? And so confused.
And this was the true motive of the balloons revealed. They were actually promoting apple pie.
Ooh, or maybe you could leave the guy with some of your balloons and make him like it would be mitosis rather than, it wouldn't be a merge, but it would be a split, and then he would roll off in his own. That might have been what you said earlier.
That was
I interpreted your thing as being some sort of glorious union in which two soldiers meet and then decide to form one massive balloon ball, such as their love for one another.
And that sounds like a bad rom-com. You suddenly have a... all these people going, like, he was a balloon soldier.
He was another balloon soldier on the opposing side.
Yes. They had chosen the same colour of balloons. Little did they realise.
This would change the fate of the battle forever, ever, ever, ever.
We're going to replace that echo effect.
And this commentary. I hope this doesn't get through to that advert.
Dear Mr. Advertiser, if you can hear this in a theatre, you've done it wrong.
Oh dear. So yeah, that was a nice positive story there. I hope you enjoyed that. We're going to move on to a local story now, which is kind of a bit, maybe you're going to go, and get very slightly peeved at, but not actually annoyed, because it's not really worth it.
Is that the section title?
No. This is that police in Cambridgeshire have been given an award by the Plain English Campaign.
Ooh, they've been nominated for the award.
Oh, nominated, sorry. And contrary to what you might think by the Plain English Award, it's actually an award for not using plain English, so it's kind of an anti-award.
So it's an ironic title?
It's actually the Golden Bull Gobbledygook Award.
Oh, sorry, you just... Appropriately there, you said the word gobbledygook, and I failed to process that as an English word. I thought you just briefly lost control of your face, and now you'd managed to rein it in, but whilst it was running loose, then it had uttered some syllables.
So what were some examples of this unplain, plain English award?
We go shopping and forget there are others watching. That's others with a capital O and an apostrophe.
Others are watching.
I think that's a band. I'm pretty sure the others released a record in 2008, and they've been lurking on Castle Hill, going, aye, aye. He hasn't locked his car.
Ah, here you go. Yes, we go shopping for... Who is not locking their car?
I don't lock my car because my car is a device I use for moving my car when it's broken down.
Oh, you own the car. You're the owner of the car.
I developed the prototype. I feel it's mine to take.
Wow.
And you also believe in using the instead of their.
Yeah.
Describe yourself in relation to the car.
It was supposed to be cool, but clearly it's not.
Yes. Who is leaving the car's keys in the lock? That's not a question. That's just a statement, apparently.
Yes, he is.
Who is leaving good presents on display in the car or inside the house? Or indeed... I'm assuming that's actually meant to be part of the next sentence.
It was actually indeed, as it turns out. Not the first bit.
Not who.
Yeah. Or indeed, who is telling the newspaper shop they're going away? Exclamation mark.
So, is that who telling the newspaper shop that who is going away, or that the newspaper shop is leaving, or that they're going away together in some kind of balloon-fueled romance?
Yes, it's some wonderful gobbledygook that gives you all of these possible outcomes. You just don't know. Your brain starts going, like, what does this mean? You know, rather than the boring, mundane types of gobbledygook, where you go, what does this mean? I haven't got a clue. It is the epitome of surreal gobbledygook, and I have never eaten.
Meanwhile, in the past,
7.5p noodles
erase themselves from Michael's timeline. In keeping with the section, I'm only going to speak in sentence.
Oh dear! So if you've got any better gobbledygook to give us, or any comments on any of the last couple of news stories, email them in.
What I really want to know.
Is do we get any more information?
That was the complete sentence.
Good. Email us studio@camfm.co.uk, on the web form at www.camfm.co.uk, or text CAM plus your message to 80809. Text costs 10p plus your standard message rate.
And for interested listeners, what CJ really wants, : to know. He will know in the next section.
97.2 camfm.co.uk.
On air and online, you're Cam FM.
This is Burstable on Cam FM. That was Glad You Came by The Wanted, and earlier we had
Vampires and something about that.
We had Vampires and Werewolves by Tokyo. Tokyo, Vampires and Wolves by Wombats. Sorry about that.
We had Vampires, Wombats and Wolves by the Tokyo.
That's not a band, that's a measure of volume.
Yes, yes, now we are back with the last couple of silly news stories. This is a project led by a Scottish university has warned of the increased likelihood of snow-free black Christmases for Lapland. Which I'm sure will terrify all parents who are going, perhaps we won't have to take our kids to Lapland then.
It should be clarified at this point that a black Christmas is a Christmas free of snow, by contrast with a white Christmas, which has snow.
Yeah, it's
to dodge the massive oncoming train of horrible racism. This isn't that.
What other antonyms for white are there? I mean, what else could they have called a non-white Christmas?
No.
A grey Christmas,
a green Christmas would have been reasonable.
But lots of like grasses and stuff die, so it'd be kind of like a strange sort of yellowy, browny, orangey as the leaves fall down Christmas.
Ah, it's a beige Christmas.
A yellow Christmas sounds a lot worse to me than a black Christmas.
That'd be why I carefully didn't just say a yellow Christmas, and instead kind of expanded it out into lots of different things, showing a whole variety of colours which you might find in the scene, which is non-snowy. Yes,
that's right.
Here on Burst the Bubble, a whole range of different shades.
A whole range.
Yeah. But yes, basically this... I would want to know what they would do with all the reindeer if this happened. Would they just go, "We reindeer, you're fired. We don't need you anymore. We're not getting any white Christmases here. You don't look right."
Well, the reindeer are mainly hired for their power of flight, and they don't look right anyway whilst they're flying. So I think they'd pretty much keep their employment. You might need to refit the sleigh, though, as, you know, runners aren't very much use. In Venice, runners aren't much use most of the places where Santa Claus goes.
Especially not when you're flying, so...
Yeah. And when you're landing, you know, I mean, anywhere in the Southern Hemisphere, you know, there's a whole series of problems with that mode of transport.
So, yeah, in fact, I think he should rethink his strategy and just, like... Get rid of the sleigh, go for something more modern looking, something sleeker, perhaps. Because the aerodynamics have got to be awful as well.
Well, maybe he could hire some of those 300 leprechauns we heard about earlier. Are leprechaun magics better than reindeer magics?
Oh, I don't know. I think that's it for that story, frankly.
I'd just like to state that I believe that there are precisely as many flying reindeer as there are leprechauns, which is to say, zero. Sorry to, like, Christmas. Why don't we worship trees?
What?
Worshipping trees was fun. You used to dance around trees and sing songs to the trees and then hit the trees with sticks that you took from the trees. That's a ceremony we can all get behind. None of this flying reindeer nonsense.
There's no, like, I don't think there's a law against you dancing around trees and hitting trees with sticks.
You try it naked in public parks.
No, thank you.
Well, then.
Flying a reindeer in a public park will get you into trouble as well.
It's not the same kind of trouble. You know, if people say, why is there this mark on your criminal record? And you say, well, I broke the laws of physics and flew around my town in a display of magic. They were like, oh, cool. You can definitely be a computer programmer. But if you say, oh, I was naked, then they have a completely different response.
This is true. I think it mainly surrounds the breaking the laws of physics bit. Yeah. If it turned out that any time you removed your pants, then like the like the gravitational constant halved, then I think that would be a huge employment prospect. I think you would mainly be employed to keep your pants on at all times. Maybe to try donning extra pairs.
Give me money, or I'll plunge us into the sun. It still wouldn't be a job.
I don't think that would happen, would it? If you have the gravitational constant everywhere, we'd be okay, wouldn't we?
Does that happen instantaneously, or does it propagate outwards at the speed of light?
It'd probably have to, you know, given the supernatural powers in play, I think we're going to get an instantaneous happening at every position.
Okay, but then that would mean that the inertial mass differed from the gravitational mass by a factor of 2, right?
That seems likely, yes.
So wouldn't that have really weird consequences?
I'm gonna thoroughly advise you keep your pants on.
So there wouldn't be weird consequences. You're talking about this person who, when their pants go down, the gravitational constant halves. That's kind of like almost a definition of weird consequences. You don't need extra weird consequences to go, hey, we've got some weird consequences of this action.
Oh dear. Perhaps you could form a superhero team. Like, you could have, like, another member of it would be whenever they don, let's say, a waistcoat, then, like, the quantum constant doubles. You know, that kind of thing. You know, the superhero team would be able to tinker with the various fundamental configuration of the universe by various modes of dress.
The problem is, what you would get here is you wouldn't get any sort of interesting scientific research done. You'd just get a stage show out of this.
I think if I were presented with that superhero team, I would find which one had the smallest effect and then kill them in controlled circumstances to work out if it was safe to kill the other ones before they blow up the universe.
So yeah, you would have the problem that it's far from clear which one is the default position if they're not alive at all, and therefore the pants stroke no pants status is very hard to determine.
Perhaps what happens if you kill one of them and then the universe ceases to exist?
Indeed. Well,
never know.
Then we're okay, because we're in the universe. We definitely know the universe never is destroyed by the ill-advised murder of somebody with magic pants, because of the universe being a thing that we're in, you see.
you ever find that it's happened in the past?
No, because universe destruction is four-dimensional. That's what I'm implying. Universe destruction is the same as saying the universe would never be. Like, this universe fundamentally never could be, because it would produce the magic pants, and then the magic pants would be used ill-advisedly, and then it would not exist, because of contradiction.
You seem to be saying that never could be is the same as got destroyed.
Yeah, basically, when you're dealing with four-dimensional things like universes.
As opposed to pants.
Yeah.
Which are entirely
pants, pants are not four-dimensional. That's one of the that's the first law of pants, is that they're thoroughly mundane in terms of their dimensional and physical properties.
I actually bought some pants earlier today, and if I get home to find that they were not fully four-dimensional, so that they'll have disappeared by the time I go to wear them tomorrow morning, I will be quite upset with Marks and Spencer's.
It's a pretty good con, isn't it?
So you get like 4D compliance stickers that I have to go around sticking them on pants that don't do this.
Keep away from fire and time.
You know, also backing up briefly, I'm not so keen on your idea of a stage show about this superhero team, because at some point you'd have a director, like, furiously screaming at an actor, going, act like the quantum constant has doubled. Act as though every cell in your body is now slightly more uncertain as to its position and or momentum compared to the other ones. That's going to come off as... Poo.
Sorry. Okay.
That's going on my CV for if I have to portray that particular character.
I'm going to put some music on.
As we have 6 minutes left till the end of the show, I think that might be redundant.
So you would
then play as a musical break, which segues neatly into the show not existing anymore.
Oh God! So this music has the power to end the show.
It does. Let us not use it. Let us keep our pants on and our music silent.
here we go. So, one another news story. Should we do that instead?
Yeah.
Great.
That seems like the founding principle of the show. So let's do it.
David Cameron's Australian accent has been described as so bad it could cause a diplomatic row.
So this story is when he's talking about having met the leaders of the Commonwealth, and the meeting was held in Australia. So he comes back and gives this speech about how... he met Julia Gillard, is that her name, the Australian Prime Minister?
Julia Gillard.
And then gave an impersonation of her, complete with terrible Australian accent. The first thing that comes to mind is, thank goodness the meeting wasn't held in South Africa, or goodness knows what we would have heard David Cameron do.
The thing that gets me is that it's been described as so bad it could cause a diplomatic row, when it's like, well... Surely, if it could, it would have done, seeing as it is a diplomatic event, and the fact that it hasn't caused a diplomatic row, all over a couple of people going a bit about it, then it's not going to cause a diplomatic row.
Well, accents are cumulative, so if he does it again, we'll be another third of a way to a diplomatic row, and if he did it a third time, Australia would be like, please, David Cameron, stop doing that.
The question is, what if it then continues afterwards? Does it continue gaining thirds, and we just have a backlog of diplomatic rows which have to be resolved?
I think we would gradually segue from diplomatic row very gently into war. One war is 10 diplomatic rows.
So is there a point when you have soldiers at the border kind of scuffling, but not under orders to actually fight, but to have sort of playground scuffles with each other?
Just pushing each other and being like, yeah. You have a stupid voice too.
You pushed first. No. You pushed first.
Oh dear.
They could actually do offensive accents at each other as the first stage of war. It would be that they don't even touch each other. They just stand across from the border going, "Cor blimey, mate. You've been up the apple pears lately. I hear the dog and bone has got lodged."
Oh, we've got a giant tea bag. What does your army have?
A water cannon. Also, we've got this weapon of mass destruction. It's this guy and his pants.
Rolf Harris today destroyed the universe. Actually, who do you think he'd side with?
Rolf Harris.
Yeah.
If he had the magic universe-destroying pence, I think he would be king of the earth. I don't think there'd be any sides to be had. I think we'd all be servants to Rolf Harris.
He's just standing there going, can you tell what it is yet? That's 1,000 for a diplomatic row right there. And everyone would go, no. No, Rolf. Please do continue.
I think Rolf would struggle to convince us that he had the universe-destroying pants, though. They're very hard weapons to, you know, you can't have a show of force using the universe-destroying pants, except for by ending the universe if you become sufficiently angry, thus meaning that the universe we live in is necessarily that in which everybody believes you.
Maybe he could just sort of stretch the elastic away from his waist and have scientists measure the gravitational constant as he did that and then ping them back.
As Switzerland drifts off into space. Oh, turns out Switzerland was the least well anchored of the nations.
Now that would be a show of force.
Oh, dear. I think we have redefined war.
And we put Switzerland into low Earth orbit, which is nice.
I'd visit.
Yeah, I'd visit.
That would actually be quite cool.
It'd only be marginally more expensive than visiting Switzerland is today.
So, given all the stories that we've actually had so far this week, can we predict in the last minute and a half, what will the news stories be next week?
War is beginning.
Switzerland deorbited due to ongoing expenses.
Hail Rolf.
Rolf's pants misplaced, United Nations dispatched.
Oh, that's going to be, price of bread soars as toast sandwich becomes immensely popular.
Hang on a moment, Rolf can't have removed his pants because that's the thing that destroys the universe. He is prevented from misplacing them in comedic style. Discount that previous news story.
That's a long headline.
Unless Rolf is just tremendously stupid, I suppose, in that he would wander around going, oh, I've misplaced the pants. Oh, no. And it turns out he's, you know, like when you're wearing your glasses all the time. It's like that. He wandered around all day going, where are the pants?
They're on top of your head.
Exactly. It turns out that was good enough, which was valuable scientific contribution.
There was. I have to, like, get the pants from just, like, the normal pants wearing location onto his head without ever being seen to wear them. Yeah, yeah. Any point to, like, one arm. I'm in. On leg. Before we moved it from the second leg. I don't know. I think that's it. I think we're just going to have to leave it all there. Thank you very much for listening. This has been a rather surreal edition of First of All. I've been Mike Ontario. So thank you, Cara.
Thank you.
And thank you, Chris. Next up thank on Cam FM. Oh, sorry. Next up on Cam FM.
It's the music of fiction.
Science of fiction with Andy Hall.